Nerdoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the new episode of the Calcio Land podcast. And this is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game, the home of the best fantasy football games, and also a place where you can read a lot of great articles from writers such as Enrico Passarella, Chloe Beresford, and John Solano. So, Alex, we're only a few weeks away from Serie A, the big transfer that we've been talking a lot about in the past week. Went through, Higuain joined Milan, Bonucci back at Juve, Caldara as well. So our great friend, co-host, producer Alex Goldberg, I know you like to play some wagers here there, so I'm going to give you a hypothetical one. If I said the over-under for Higuain goals just in Serie A in the upcoming season at 17.5, which one would you take, the over or the under?
Okay, 17.5. David, I'm starting to question if you are Vegas yourself. That's a pretty good over-under right there. I'm going to take the over, but I have to think about it a little bit because he scored 16 goals last season in Serie A. But overall, I think he played better than just scoring 16 goals. He had 16 goals, 6 assists. In my opinion, he had a really good season. And I have to be consistent. The reason why I didn't want him on Chelsea, or I wasn't even fully against it, but the reasons why I did not maybe want him on Chelsea were due to money and age, but it was not about this year's production. I said many times, I expect him to have a good statistical year this year for whatever team he plays for. I absolutely think he still has goals in him. He's only 30 years old. Some people are pretending like he's 35 years old. I absolutely think he can almost come close to maybe a 20-goal season. And I also like some of the artillery he has around him in Suso, Hakan Çalhanoğlu, all of these players I'm pretty impressed by and I think will help Gonzalo Higuain. So I'm going to take the over. I'm going to say he scores maybe 18, 19, maybe even 20. So David, I got to ask you, and while I'm asking this, I'm going to go on a friendly website and maybe place a wager. What are your final thoughts of the Bonucci, Caldara, Higuain deal?
So I agree with your analysis is on the goals. I'm going to go with, I think 18 sounds about right, so I'll go the over. And interestingly, I saw someone that I follow on Twitter, Raffaele, tweeted the list of the last players to wear number 9 at Milan, a pretty depressing list. We have Pato, Matri, Torres, Destro, Luis Adriano, Lapadula, and Andre Silva. And all of them combined scored 19 goals for Milan. So I could see Higuain by himself in one season being right at that number. So the final thoughts on the deal, and I wrote about it for our friends at Euro Fantasy Game yesterday. I find it really interesting that we have two of the players involved with two of the biggest, most controversial transfers in Serie A the past few years, Juve paying the exit clause in Higuain's contract, taking him away from Napoli for $90 million. Of course, Bonucci going to Milan last season. Those were two of the most controversial transfers we've covered in recent years. And interestingly, now these players are traded for each other with Caldara thrown into the mix. It's also, you know, the fact that they're two of the highest paid players in Serie A before Ronaldo's arrival. So it's interesting how the contracts all worked out. So a couple of things stood out to me. Juve's press release was very specific and mentioned the fees were basically Bonucci and Caldara were valued for the same amount. Juve also pointed out on the paragraph on Caldara that they're making a $22 million profit on that. Just goes to show how valuable these young players are when you can sell them for these big profits because you don't have a big amortized value under it, so it becomes a bigger profit. So when you look at Juve, and I've been saying this for a while, they were really looking at it from a financial standpoint. So they had to make a profit on Caldara. Bonucci's salary ends up being kind of a wash with Higuain's, but what they're getting rid of is the big amortized value of Higuain. So Higuain was costing Juve around $35 million a year. That's going to be considerably less with Bonucci, and add on top of that that they made $22 million on Caldara. So financially, this made sense for Juve. They really had to get rid of that salary from their books. The other thing that stood out to me is how well things have been going for Milan since the Elliott Fund took over. Of course, they won the appeal with UEFA. They bring in Leonardo. Any way you slice it, this is a home run deal for Milan. They get a number nine type striker that could guarantee to score 15 to 20 goals, which they've lacked since Ibrahimovic left. All the teams that finished ahead of them in the past few seasons had a player like that. So that's a home run for them. I do think, though, for Juve, this deal isn't as bad as Juve Twitter has made it out to be. Again, it's in the context of Juve spending a lot already on Ronaldo, keeping Douglas Costa, Sean, Perin, Cancelo. Juve spent a lot, so they had to get rid of Higuain's contract. It seems like Caldara was perfectly fine with going to Milan to get an opportunity to play more frequently from the get-go. So I can see this deal as a win for all involved. And one thing that's always a win is when our listeners send us in questions for the podcast. As always, we look for questions on Serie A, transfers, movies, TV, journalism. As always, you can send questions using the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, the first one is, was Juventus investing so much in Higuain ultimately worth it?
So someone asked me this question today on Twitter, and I really had to think about it, because when Higuain joined Juve, I wrote a column saying that essentially his deal would be judged on how well Juve would do in the Champions League. And look, you know, they made a final with Higuain. I think his track record in the Champions League was fairly good. He had a decisive brace against Monaco in a Champions League semifinal. In the final against Real Madrid that they lost 4-1, he had an assist. He wasn't the reason they lost. Overall, against Spurs, we saw last season, he was the decisive player. He ended up scoring 10 goals in the Champions League. But what's important to note is that he never scored against Real Madrid, which is the team that ultimately Juve was trying to get over the hump with. And yeah, when you invest so much in a player that old, Juve saw how hard it was to eventually sell him. Today, even Higuain in the press conference with Milan, and I thought it was a really good press conference, he pointed out that the only one at Chelsea that wanted him was Sarri. And you know better than me, Alex, when it comes to players over 30, Chelsea have a pretty strict line. So Juve invested a lot in Higuain. They're going to get back their amortized value. It's interesting that the loan with option to buy with Milan, the numbers add up exactly to his amortized value. So in that sense, you know, they didn't make a profit on him. They didn't win the Champions League. So you could say that the deal, you know, ultimately wasn't worth it. But what I will say is he ended up being a lot more important in Serie A than we would have expected. When Juve signed him, the thought was, look, you know, Juve can win Serie A without him. They also took away Napoli's best player by signing him. To Napoli's credit, they reinvested that money well, and they still were a contender against Juve. So I would say Higuain ended up being a lot more important in Serie A. In his first season at Juve, he was voted Juve's player of the year. Last season, he scored 2 out of 3 of the most important goals for Juve's season. That was at the San Paolo last December. Had Juve lost that game, they would have been well behind Napoli. They would have been at -7 points had they lost that match. So that was really important. And then, of course, the one against Inter that broke Napoli's spirit. So he ended up being a lot more useful in Serie A than expected. So in that sense, I think he was more important. So you put a gun to my head, I would say ultimately the Higuain deal wasn't worth it. But when I wrote that we would only judge it on the Champions League, that ended up not being true. And also, it's kind of interesting the progression of the Juve striker pursuit. I think Tevez was really the first one that raised the bar. They paid him more than they had paid any other player in the Marotta-Paratici era. After that, they spent even more to get Higuain, and then ultimately they went with Ronaldo. So there was kind of a progression with that, and I think without Higuain, they wouldn't have been able to get to the position to get Ronaldo. So I think his legacy is a little bit complicated. I think he was still a very good Juve player, but he will end up being remembered a lot because the club didn't win the Champions League with him.
All right, well, staying on Juventus, David, are Juve making a push to sign Milinkovic-Savic now that they cleared El Pepita's salary?
You see, look, Juve proved me really wrong many times this summer. I never thought they would sign Ronaldo. I didn't think they could ultimately really afford him. But I think right now Juve is really in mode of making up money from that deal. So, you know, I always think, you know, timing of deals, you know, is it better for a club to sell first and then reinvest the money, and then the fans can say, oh, great, we sacrificed these players, but we ended up getting player X with that money. When you go the opposite route and you just buy the star right away and then have to make some sales later on, you know, for fans it can be a little bit disappointing. I think the mood on Juve Twitter this week wasn't particularly good as a result of this. So I'm of the impression that Juve at this point, I don't expect them to make any other significant additions. I think you're going to see them sell more of their young players. Favilli, who was very good on this U.S. tour, is going to be sold, you know, and Juve is going to keep a buyback clause. I think the same thing could happen with Keane as well, who has a market outside of Italy. I could see Juve making profits on those two players and keeping a buyback clause. So I think more of the activity that we'll see with Juve was on the outgoing side. But again, look, they've proven me really wrong this summer already.
All right, one more on Juventus. How come Paulo Dybala hasn't been sold during the last two summer transfer windows?
I think this really speaks to the growth of Juve and their ambition. You know, they ended up paying Dybala a very high salary last year. They ended up bringing up his salary to Higuain's level when you consider that Dybala is considerably younger. I think Juve is just raising their profile. They have increased ambition. I think players are more likely to stay at Juve to begin with. It's also important to note that Pogba was at Juve for four seasons. I think everyone thought eventually he was going to leave. Dybala is coming up on his fourth season, so I don't think it should be too surprising. It's just going to be very interesting if Dybala is going to decide that long-term this is the place he wants to be. It could be. I mean, it just seems that Juve really are doing a lot to raise their profile.
All right, next one, David. With Higuain's arrival, is it safe to say Andre Silva will leave Milan? And could he head to Galatasaray?
So I love Turkish Twitter. I really regret this summer that we didn't do more on Turkish Twitter. So I've been getting a lot of questions on Andre Silva. You know, the usual domino effect with transfers, a team brings in a big-name player at a position, fans of other team, it's like blood in the water for Sharks. They're like, oh, can we get this player? So Andre Silva already lost his number. Higuain took over number 9. I think there was always a good chance he was on his way out this summer. With Higuain coming in, I guess it's good news for Galatasaray fans, assuming Galatasaray fans want Andre Silva, which, you know, if you judge by his track record in Serie A, I don't know if that's really warranted. But in any event, you know, the fact that Higuain's there and Andre Silva can be swapped with Falcao, with Monaco, both are Mendes clients, I guess make it more likely that he could go to Galatasaray. I could see him at Wolverhampton, you know, a club that Mendes has a lot of relationships with. So let's see what happens. My guess is Andre Silva will leave. Milan invested a lot in him. I'm not sure if it's going to have to be a loan or if they're going to be able to get someone willing to pay his amortized value left.
All right, staying on Milan simply, David, who could Milan sign next?
So all indications are that the midfield is where they want to look at next. The two players that Di Marzio has linked them with are from your team, Alex Chelsea, Bakayoko, coming off, you know, a very disappointing season. I don't think he's an ideal fit in Sarri's system. What are your thoughts on that? Do you see Bakayoko as a pretty good fit with that so far?
Ooh, no, not in Sarri's system. Bakayoko is a no-go, a hard pass for me. He's just too clumsy of a midfielder. He's not at all a Sarri-esque midfielder. Sometimes when there's a managerial change, it benefits players, but it also hinders players, and Bakayoko definitely falls into the latter. AC Milan, you can have him on loan, straight out buy, whatever you want, he's yours.
Yeah, I agree with that analysis. I don't see him as a good fit. So let's see if Chelsea would be open to a loan. I just don't see Milan being able to afford, because Chelsea paid a lot for him. The other player that they've been linked to is Samaseku from Salzburg, a player that has just 1 year left on his deal. So let's see if Leonardo can pull another rabbit out of his hat. You know, in his introductory press conference, he talked about looking at three roles, a striker, a midfielder, and an offensive winger. Let's see if there are other players that come out of the blue for Milan. But so far, I mean, Milan fans have to be really thrilled already with Caldara and Higuain. That's a big step forward.
Absolutely. All right, next one, David. Will Milan's new owners go ahead with plans for a new stadium?
So the Elliott Fund's really on a roll. I like that Milan fans are really getting behind them. Now, you know, you hear a lot of talk about new stadium for Milan. I think during the season, every time things went badly with the team, the previous ownership floated out plans for a new stadium. So I always take that stuff with a grain of salt. Even when we had John Solano on last week and he was talking about Roma's efforts with stadiums, it's just a very hard thing to do in Italy. So I always think it's kind of dangled as a carrot, and I try to look at the other news, and I saw that there's a big renovation coming for San Siro. It definitely needs a sprucing up. On TV, it looks great, but if you go behind the scenes, it needs a little bit of work. So the fact that they're going to renovate San Siro leads me to believe they'll be there for a while, and I think that's perfectly fine. If they modernize it behind the scenes, I think there's few better places to be.
All right, David, how about this? What are the odds Inter land Luka Modric, and do you think they mismanaged the Arturo Vidal situation?
You know, Sadio's profile has really, really risen when now the links of Modric to Inter don't sound as completely insane as in the past when Messi used to be linked with Inter almost every other international break. Like, look, it's very, very difficult. Both Di Marzio and Fabrizio Romano, you know, keep talking about it as a dream. Inter are pursuing it. They're banking on the fact that Modric feels that maybe there's nothing left to prove at Real Madrid, and maybe I could see that. Inter also has a lot of Croatian players. Of course, they have Perisic and Brozovic. They just added Vršalko, so Modric could play with three of his teammates there. So the fit might be there, but, you know, again, what are the odds that Real Madrid are going to let him go after losing Ronaldo? He does have a humongous exit clause, like something like $700 million. It's not even a realistic exit clause. So Real Madrid would have to be open to it. Let's see if they just decide to completely open a new cycle. So I can see why it's being referred as a dream, because with so little time left in the transfer window, you have to wonder what Madrid would replace him. Which leads me to say that if you could make an argument Inter mismanaged the Vidal situation. He's now very close to joining Barcelona. Inter really seemed to be in the driver's seat for him. They had a deal to sign him for a fairly reasonable price, but they were waiting and see what would happen with Modric. So to me, maybe, you know, if you can have Vidal at a pretty decent price, you just do it. So you could say that it's possible they mismanaged. And it's too bad. I would have loved to see Vidal back in Serie A.
All right, in a sort of follow-up, should Inter fail to land Modric or another midfielder, would that make it harder for Chelsea to land Matias Vecino?
So it's an interesting situation with Inter, because now there's rumors that they are once again after Darmian from Manchester United, and it's possible that they could move Asamoah up to the midfield. That was his original position at Udinese when Juve signed him. They kind of reinvented him as a left wing back. I thought as a left wing back, Asamoah made a ton of sense for Inter, because I think he's quite good at that position, really addresses a need. But if they sign Darmian, maybe they'll move Asamoah to that spot. And in that case, I think they would be open to selling Vecino. The thing is, with Vecino, they can make a pretty good profit on him. They paid only $20 million for him. I could see Chelsea paying more than that. They've amortized 1 year off it. So I wouldn't discount it altogether. So let's see what happens with Asamoah's position, and maybe Inter does go after another midfielder, even if they lost out on Vidal, likely to Barca, and if Modric stays at Real Madrid.
Yeah, for me as a Chelsea fan, I'm just out on Matias Vecino. It's not that I don't think he's a good player or I don't think he could help, but I don't really want to pay that price for someone who really should be a backup for Chelsea. Like you said a handful of episodes ago, he just doesn't move the needle enough. So, David, staying on Inter, do you think Inter can finish second in Serie A next season?
Yeah, I think with or without Modric, with or without Vidal, I think talent-wise, they are the second-best team in Serie A. A lot of the guests that we have on have picked them as well. You as well, Alex, have them second. Right now, look, you know, the fact is Inter in the past has done really well in transfer window, and it hasn't really translated to the season. They also have quite a few young players, but as you have pointed out, Alex, they do have A lot of players they brought in know Serie A. They come from other teams. They played at the top level, so that should help. So me, on paper, I clearly have them as the second-best team.
They have been so damn impressive in this transfer window. David, next Twitter question. How legit are the rumors of Napoli pursuing Ochoa and Andrea Belotti?
So for Ochoa, definitely. I think and that's the Mexican goalkeeper. I think the fact that Napoli didn't sign Arias from PSV because he would have taken up their last non-EU slot. He ended up going to Atletico Madrid to replace Vrchalko. And I know Inter fans are disappointed with this Vidal thing, but let's not sleep on how good that Vrchalko acquisition was. But I digress. The fact that Arias went to Atletico Madrid after already agreeing to terms with Napoli leads me to believe that there's a lot of legs to Ochoa potentially coming in. I think the fact that Mire, who arrived from Udinese, who had played for Spal last season, getting injured, they want more of a guarantee at the goalkeeper position, so I could see that happening. Now, I've seen a lot of sites, and some of them based in Naples have the rumor on Belotti. And look, some of these sites were ahead on the Ancelotti thing. They've been very right about that. Let's see if that happens. I personally think Milik, assuming he's healthy, is at least as good as Belotti. I think I'd rather have Milik of the two. They still have Mertens. They still have Inglese, so I'm not sure. But I could see that Napoli is getting a lot of pressure to try to sign a big name in response to Ronaldo. So let's see if they do it. I'm not sure if Belotti is the type of guy that really excites fans. I'd be surprised if this happens. I could see Belotti staying at Torino, but his price has fallen so much that he's worth it to Napoli.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Let's stay on a striker since you just talked about Belotti. Could we see Super Mario Balotelli back in Serie A for the upcoming season?
So Balotelli seemed all but done to Marseille. There was some controversy with Vieira, the manager now came at Nice, on how all of that was handled. You have to wonder if that deal is going to happen. Parma, who are trying to be, pretty ambitious in their return to Serie A, are willing to pay him a salary of $2.5 million a season net. Let's see if that's enough to convince him. I think he'd be a home run on a team like Parma. I'd love to have him back on Serie A, but I do think ultimately Marseille is probably the place that makes the most sense for him.
All right, David, let's move away from football now. What are some of your favorite debut albums?
So I got a good question on that. You guys know I love these questions on music. So I came up with a few that I think are home runs, and that's definitely Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction. Oasis, definitely maybe album. To me, Doze almost sounds like a greatest hits record for a band. If you told me if I heard that record and you told me, yeah, this band's been around for 20 years, this is a collection of their best songs, I would believe it. That's how good that album is. We also have in rap, we have Nas debut albums, really awesome. The Wu-Tang's first album's awesome. I'd say almost all the first batch of solo albums from the Wu-Tang Clan are awesome albums. So in rap, those where I go to. The other two in rock and roll that stand out to me are the Stone Roses debut album. Maybe they would have been better off just ending it after that album, but their debut album's awesome. And the Sex Pistols kind of took that advice. Their debut album, Nevermind the Bollocks, is awesome, and they didn't record any other albums after that. So that's my list. If you listeners have any more, send some in using the CulturalLand hashtag.
All right, David, last Twitter question for episode 141. What was seeing the Smashing Pumpkins in Boston like?
Yeah, so I was really on a streak of a lot of shows over. I was at the TD Garden 3 out of 4 nights. It was really pretty incredible experience. I saw Radiohead twice and Smashing Pumpkins on Tuesday. They were recognized me on the concession stands. I had been there for so many nights. So I'm really blessed with that sort of stuff. So I have to say it was a very interesting show. I'm not the biggest Smashing Pumpkins fan, but I do dig them. I love their drummer, Jimmy Chamberlain, and I didn't know what to expect at this show. I'll tell you, I've been going to concerts at the TD Garden, which is where the Celtics play in Boston, for about 20 years. I've never seen a band go so much past curfew once they had started a show on time. I have seen Guns N' Roses play there where they started basically after the curfew, but Smashing Pumpkins played a really long time. I have a feeling they lost money on that show. It was only half full. You get fined when you go over curfew by the minute. So I respect the artistic vision of just providing the show the way it was. Billy Corgan definitely did exactly the show he wanted. Some situations were really over the top. He is someone that is involved in wrestling. He owns like a wrestling federation, and sometimes I wonder if he was literally being serious or not. It was so over the top. I mean, I don't know, playing covers like Stairway to Heaven and Space Oddity feels like a little bit like a lot. But I have to say the Smashing Pumpkins songs were really good. I didn't, you know, I kind of forgot how there was a period in the mid-90s that you could have made a great case they were the biggest band in the world. And they played over 30 songs, and there was definitely a lot of classics. So very interesting. I respect artist that is just really true to themselves above all else. So in that sense, I really enjoyed it. So a couple of quick disclaimers. I was traveling this week, so I didn't have my microphone. We had to use a different landline, so don't blame Alex for the audio. We'll be back to normal next week. And for the interview segment of the podcast, I'm thrilled to welcome my friend Phil Brown from Beyond the Pitch. I had done his podcast earlier this week. I definitely asked him about some Serie A stuff, but we got into Premier League, boxing, and podcasting as well. So I think you'll really enjoy the interview. And a big thank you to all our listeners. Please keep sending questions for the next podcast using the CalcioLand hashtag. Please leave us reviews on iTunes. Those are really helpful. And I hope everyone has a great weekend. And for the interview segment of the podcast, I am thrilled to be joined by my really good friend, Phil Brown. You guys know him as the host of Beyond the Pitch. He's a frequent guest on Talk Sport. We did the first leg of the interview on Beyond the Pitch, the fantastic podcast that Phil hosts earlier this week. So we figured we'd do return leg in my home stadium at CalcioLand. So, Phil, as always, it's a real pleasure to have you on. Welcome back to the show.
Absolute pleasure to be on, guys. Thank you so much.
Great, Phil. So we talked about some of these topics on your show, and I wanted to kind of hit them from a different perspective. Of course, people see you as an expert in the Premier League, one of the best follows for Manchester United, sure, out there on Twitter. So I wanted to ask you about Ronaldo, because we've been through this in the past. In the summer, he's linked with a move away from Real Madrid. Usually it's with Manchester United, this year with Juventus. So when the rumors first emerged, what was your reaction to it? Did you think there was a chance, or did you think this was a more of the same?
I thought it was more of the same, to be honest. We'd seen this play out so many times with Ronaldo, where, you know, he had alluded to being unhappy, get what he wants, sell, stay. But it really was a point in his career where 33, now or never. And because what else could he really do at Real Madrid? I mean, he'd done everything. And I think that given the nature of who Ronaldo is, the fact that he always challenges himself, it's not a surprise he's went to Serie A. And I'm glad he did that. I'm glad that he did move on from Real Madrid, because, look, there was nothing more to the story he could write. And to see him going to another league, the Italian league, he's now been in England, he's of course a little bit in Portugal, Spain, Italia. I think it's great for him, and I think maybe it's the one thing that separates him from Messi for me, the fact that he's taken risks in his career, gone to leagues where he doesn't speak the language, he's learned the language, learned the culture, and adapted, and I think that speaks volumes for him.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm with you. I was very surprised up until the day that the deal was announced, to be honest. So it just goes to show. So you alluded to the fact that it's great that he's going to a new league. I think, you know, that's going to allow him to potentially add to his career achievements and how we look back on it more than going, say, back to the Premier League. So I wanted to ask you about the impact of this. Do you see this? Obviously, for Juve, this is really raises their profile, you know, marketing wise. Do you think that benefits the league as a whole? Do you think there's going to be more eyeballs on Serie A? You and I have talked a lot about the league. You do a really good job covering it on your podcast, not just with me. But do you think this is really going to bring more attention to the league that's actually been really quite entertaining the past few years?
Yeah, see, this is sort of maybe where Italy lacks in behind England, in that it doesn't do a terrific job of telling lies. It doesn't market itself exceptionally well. When the Premier League is running around telling everyone it's the best league in the world. That's marketing. You know, that's not reality. Yeah. If you look at Serie A, for example, I mean, it's not like big spending is relatively new. I mean, if you take a look at last season, I think Serie A was number two. It spent almost 900 million last in 2017-18 season. The problem is with a lot of that spending, to me, wasn't sustainable, with the exception of Juventus. Right? If you look at Milan, Milan spent what they spent last season, something like 190 million.
Yeah,
and they recorded a net loss of 162 million, whereas Juventus spent just slightly less and recorded a loss of 25 million. So it always felt like Juventus were selling to buy, much more sustainable model, got a little bit of help with Fiat to do the Ronaldo deal. But look, Serie A has been spending money for quite a while. They just don't market the same way. And if you look at the performance of the Juventus, the Champions League, the league is on a par with the Premier League. It's on a par with Serie A, or La Liga, sorry. It's an exceptional league. And, you know, take a look at the coaches that are there. Napoli were amazing to watch last season.
Yeah.
So I think that to the casual fan, maybe there's ground to be made up there. But for actual football fans, we know that this is an exceptional league. But yes, of course, Ronaldo will definitely help commercially. And it's the only reason why you spend that type of money in Ronaldo. Obviously, there's a football side, but the commercial side, I mean, he's made Real Madrid. Beckham was massive for MLS. I'm not comparing MLS with Serie A, of course. But sometimes you get an iconic figure that comes to your league that changes the perception of it, and I think Ronaldo will do that. And Serie A has an exceptional league, though.
It's great to hear it from you, and not just hearing it from us on the podcast. So well said. So you mentioned about the great coaches that we've had in Serie A, and a lot of them have come to the Premier League. Some have stayed longer than others, and Antonio Conte, after two seasons, unceremoniously left Chelsea, even though he had started the preseason with the team. So let me ask you, how do you think he's going to ultimately be remembered? Say in 4 or 5 years, when we have more time to digest 2 years there, how do you think he's ultimately remembered?
I think he's going to be ultimately remembered as being positive. Look, I'll explain when I close his ears here. Chelsea's a very difficult club to manage. First of all, what undoes Chelsea managers is almost always the same reason. And it's always down to control and personnel, who comes in, who comes out. When you are not in control of who comes in and who goes out, players don't fear a manager because they know that they're not in control of their future. So it's a very difficult football club to coach because, you know, Michael Emanuele, before he left, was responsible for bringing in players. Now Marina is responsible for it. And that's very frustrating. Ever since Antonio Conte's been there, he complained that he hasn't got the players that he wanted. He didn't want Morata last season. He wanted Lukaku. He ended up getting Morata because Chelsea wouldn't pay the money for Lukaku. And so I think that people forget the failures at Chelsea because they know that it's a very difficult club to manage. It happened to Mourinho too. It's happened to everybody there. And I don't think that will be part of how people remember Conte. It'll be how he did his first season.
Yeah, I hope that's certainly the case. So we mentioned the change at the coaching at Chelsea, and now Sarri is there. And interestingly, he's a coach that in the past has tried not to really get that involved with transfer. He's more, give me the players, whatever the club decides, I'll manage. And you got to wonder if that was also one of the reasons why they hired him. But he joins in the Premier League. We have some managers that play, you know, pretty offensive football, and we obviously have him, Pep Guardiola, and Klopp. So I want to ask you, do you think that in a way helps or hinders Manchester United? And let's be honest, Jose, definitely not in that vein. So do you think an opposite style helps or hinders Manchester United when they face them?
It all depends on how they succeed on the field. If Sarri's playing brilliant football but finishing fifth, it'll not perturb United or Mourinho at all. If same with Klopp. Klopp hasn't won anything at Liverpool. So this is why Mourinho doesn't face that scrutiny that he would face if Liverpool and Chelsea were ahead of him in the league, because there's really not much point to playing pragmatic football if it's not delivering results, it's not delivering trophies. What's the point? I mean, why bore yourself into finishing fifth when you don't have to? And so there's no question Mourinho was partly defined by what happened at Manchester City. No question. Yeah. But if I was Mourinho, I would focus on my own problems. You know, worry about your own team and how they play. If Liverpool and Chelsea are ahead of United next season, playing attractive football, no question Mourinho's, it'll turn the heat up on Mourinho.
For sure. So speaking of Mourinho, do you think, you know, he has a pretty spotty track record, and of being generous, the third year at a club. This summer, it seems like, you know, he's starting to set it up so things don't work out. He's already starting the complaining early. So what do you think the chances are that we have another implosion, or do you think they ultimately get it together?
I think it's high. I think basically for the last 6 months, Mourinho's been campaigning for his next job. I think the fact that when you look after the Sevilla game, where United were atrocious in both legs, atrocious. He was at pains to point out that the failures of Manchester United is not mine. I have no problems with my teams getting into quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals, but this club have. You know, in some ways, he reminds me of Donald Trump, in that all the successes are his and all the failures are somebody else's. And I think that this is Mourinho telling everybody, just like he's been doing all summer, these failures at this club aren't mine. If they don't give me the players, I can't do anything. So if you're PSG or you're somebody else and you're suspecting that I may not be the coach that I once was, just know that this isn't my fault. And so I think that's what he's been doing for months. That being said, he's still done a good job at United. I mean, if he left today and you looked at his track record at the club, you'd have to say it's been successful.
Yeah.
And some of this, the short and the answer is United are still very much stuck in a previous era because Ferguson was there for so long that they didn't evolve as a club, and that hasn't helped Mourinho. So they don't recruit well. They're really not adapting the market at all, and that's both buying and selling, so it doesn't help. And it's not Mourinho's fault what players cost.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Okay, well, speaking of transfers, you're really plugged in with Manchester United. Sometimes when I have to write some of my columns, I like to bounce things off of you. So it's amazing to say, but the transfer window's about to close in the Premier League. Do you see Manchester United making more moves before it shuts down before the first game?
Yeah, I think they'll sign at least one more. I think they'll most likely sign a center back, which is, at the moment, Alderweireld will be the favorite for that.
Okay.
So they're talking to Spurs right now to get him. Whether they can agree a fee or not, I don't know. But certainly Spurs would sell him. I think United, he's down the last year on his contract. He hasn't played much the last 6 months. United don't want to pay $50 million for him. I think they'll end up signing another center back, but it won't be enough. They still need another wide player. They've only got one striker at the club, Lukaku. I mean, it's just woefully short.
So let me ask you kind of a hypothetical question. What do you think would be more of a bigger surprise? Manchester City not winning the Premier League this season or Manchester United finishing out of the top four? What would surprise you more between the two?
Maybe City not winning the league. Because with United, it's going to be either or. United are either going to compete for the title, or it's going to be they're going to be outside the top four. Because if they compete for the title, Mourinho stays. If they don't, it'll be a complete meltdown.
I think I kind of agree with that answer. So let's talk about one positive subject at Manchester United, and that was Paul Pogba's performances in the World Cup. I thought especially in the final, he was really brilliant. So I wanted to ask, you know, what stood out to you about the performances in the World Cup, and do you think that's going to translate in a better season at Manchester United?
I wish A would equal B, but unfortunately I don't. He was exceptional at Juventus. He was exceptional for France. It's not a good look for Mourinho that when he's away from him, Paul Pogba puts in mature performances. Puts in the performances that United bought him for. Obviously, he's got different players at France that allow him to do the things that he does. But, you know, Matic was signed to free up Pogba. There's 30 million. Fredji was signed to free up Pogba. There's another 50-60 million. I think it would be cheaper to free Chapo Guzman. I'm just wondering, like, how many more players they need to sign to free him up. Look, he's a Rolls-Royce footballer, but he has to take some responsibility because for the last 6 months at United, he's been playing like Rod Stewart in a friendly, right? I mean, he's just been strolling about, knocking the ball here, knocking the ball there, You know, and I mean, if you go back to the Sevilla game when he came on, he was utterly dreadful. And it tells me that there's a major problem between him and Mourinho, which there is a major problem between him and Mourinho. Pogba's not happy at the minute. And if we're talking about a transfer window in England that would be extended to the 31st, I think Pogba could leave this summer. The fact that there's only 9 days left in England tells me that United will keep him. But if this was a window where we were going to the end of August, I could definitely see Paul Pogba not resolving his differences at United. The only question remains, Dave, is Pogba and the rest of the players like Martial. Maybe they stay because Mourinho isn't there much longer. And I think under a different coach, we'd see an exceptional Martial and a Pogba. They have to take responsibility too, of course. I wish we would see that performance at Old Trafford, but United don't have a Kante.
Yeah, that's very true. So one other subject that I always like to talk to you about is boxing. And, you know, I feel like the sport is really having a resurgence. I've really enjoyed on ESPN Plus. They have a really good coverage of boxing. They have a great archive of all the great fights from the past. They have a lot of, you know, newer fights. And I've been getting back into the sport, something that I really enjoyed years ago. So tell our listeners who maybe aren't that much into boxing, any fighters or any trends that you're seeing in the sport. And, hey, do you agree that it's having some kind of a small resurgence as well?
Most definitely it's having a resurgence. The problem for boxing is years ago it swapped its market and said, look, we're okay with getting 1 million viewers versus 30 million as long as the 1 million viewers are paying, right? Yeah. And so they swapped the market for a mainstream market. Now they're trying to bring the sport back into the mainstream, and that's hard because most people haven't watched boxing for 20 years and don't know the backstories. It's an amazing sport. I'm fortunate enough to know a lot of fighters. I have nothing but respect for the work that they do to stay in shape, to make weight, which is a nightmare for a fighter. But in terms of young fighters, the two probably brightest young fighters in the sport that nobody will have heard of are Jaime Munguia, who's an exceptional young middleweight. He's already a world champion after beating Saddam Ali. Another, David Benavidez. Guys that are slightly older, you know, there's Ryan Burnett, who's a young kid from Belfast, my home city. He's already a two-time world champion. He's 25. So I think the fight I'd like to see most in the sport beyond Golovkin and Canelo 2 would be Errol Spence Jr. and Mikey Garcia, which would just be a phenomenal fight. Or Errol Spence Jr., who's a young American fighter, fantastic fighter, just technically superb. The number one fighter in the sport right now, without a shadow of a doubt, is Vasily Lomachenko, who is the Lionel Messi of boxing. If you ever see Lomachenko fight, it is Keanu Reeves in The Matrix doing stuff that I've never... His last... not his last fight, but the last three before that, all the fighters quit in the middle of the fight and walked out because they couldn't hit him. I mean, that's unreal. I mean, the guy is sensational. And I would encourage anyone, if you want to see a phenomenal athlete, just YouTube Vasily Lomachenko and just watch him, because you don't have to watch boxing to appreciate his genius. Brilliant.
Fantastic. I look forward to that. Now, let's talk about your brilliant podcast. And for those of you that don't know, that's where kind of I got it starting doing a podcast. It was a long time ago. Like, Phil and I really go back a lot of years, and you guys came back this week. I was thrilled to be on the show. So on Beyond the Pitch, you really get a lot of great coverage. Obviously, Premier League coverage, Manchester United specifically, fantastic. You also have Juan Arango, who does very good investigative journalism on a lot of interesting topics. And, you know, Phil covers a lot of different leagues as well. He has me on often on Serie A. So tell our listeners, you know, a little bit more what you guys are looking to do with your guests. Tell us what we can expect from Beyond the Pitch in the coming months.
Yeah, it's funny. This was the first summer I took off in probably 10 years. I really wanted to think about what we wanted to do at BTP, because they become a little bit boring and repetitive. And I was really feeling like either we change direction and do some things different, or I don't know if I want to do this anymore, because I wasn't enjoying it. And so I thought long and hard about it over the summer. and we changed some stuff. We added Spanish language content, which we're delighted about because we're getting really good downloads on our Spanish language. And like I said, we started the show back up again in the last week. In the last week and a half, we've had Giovanni Elber on, we had Martin McKellis on, we had Juan Mata, we had Andre Herrera, we had Steve McManaman on, yourself on. I'm going to be interviewing Rafael Da Silva, who's the old United right back, who now plays for Lyon. I'm going to interview him on Sunday. I have Martin Tyler on Monday. And we're adding a Central America show where it's going to cover CONCACAF, again, Spanish language. So we're extremely busy. We're doing a lot more domestic content as well. So MLS has been working with us. The Bundesliga have been working with us to get Bundesliga content. So next year, this season, you're going to see with us just a lot more diverse content. We're trying really hard to not make it Manchester United focused. And unfortunately, it just is the nature of the beast, given my connections. We try to make sure our content is diverse for a lot of different listeners, and our download numbers are good. They're healthy. And we're launching a new website this week, so probably tomorrow, actually.
Fantastic.
A lot of stuff going on.
That's great. And I'm really excited by the idea you're kind of changing a little bit the format. I totally get after a while it gets a little bit stale. So, a lot of our listeners have their own podcast. Any tips you can give, some things that you've learned recently? The last time you were on, you gave us a lot of really good ones. So anything else that comes to mind that you think people can incorporate?
It all depends on where you're at. A lot of people out there want to start podcasts, and people just go into it with unrealistic expectations that think as soon as I start a podcast, I'll have a million listeners because everybody wants to hear what I have to say. And it just doesn't work out like that. And you will know what I'm talking about here, but the amount of work that goes into making a podcast successful is extensive. There's a lot of moving parts, and you can't be an expert in all of them. So if you're going to get into a podcast, and I think I said this the last time, but I can't emphasize this enough. You really must do it for the love of the podcast. If you get into it for the purpose of profit or any other benefit, it's not going to work because you change your relationship with the sport immediately the minute you use it to make money and to make fame, and then it becomes a job and it's not fun anymore. You have to do it for the love of what the sport, and if you do that, then you'll grow anyway. But people get into this thinking they're going to make all this money, they're going to be journalists, they're going to interview all these players, and it just doesn't work like that. So I just encourage anyone, whatever you want to do, do it for the love of a hobby and let it grow naturally, organically, and be patient because these things take a long, long time to grow.
Always great tips, Phil. You did a great job. You definitely got more than a few away goals on the second leg of this. So I can't thank you enough for coming on, brother. I really appreciate it. And best of luck on the season with Beyond the Pitch. We definitely look forward to listening to your show.
Same to yourself, boys. Keep up the great work. Thank you so much.